Talking Records Podcast. Talking Records Podcast. Talking Records Podcast. We talk about our favorite records. Talking Records Podcast. We're so glad you tuned in. Thank you all for listening. You showed up to the right place. Jed and his friends dive deep and analyze the records we have grown to love. We'll tell you how we found the band, then give you a track by track breakdown of all the songs. So grab your favorite beverage and pull up a seat. Today we'll look at another record in its entirety.
Shall we dance? Or maybe just limp around? Hello everyone, what's up? My name is Jed and you're listening to the Talking Records Podcast. I'm just a huge fan of music and I tend to enjoy to learn about things I love. Here, we take an album and break it down, rounding up the backstories, discussing how we found the records, and diving into our interpretations of the tracks. I'm thrilled to be joined once again by my good friend and fellow podcaster, Greg. How's it going, Greg?
Excellent. Thank you very much for having me, Jed. I'm delighted to be here.
It is really good to have you back. We had a great chat about the Bouncing Souls.
Mm-hmm. I love that one. That was such an important and fun time for me, so I'm just like so thrilled that we get to do it again.
And we picked another good one, Lawrence Arms, O Calcutta. Very excited to dive into this one with you today. Before we do that, Greg, you co-host the formidable Unscripted Moments, a podcast about propaganda, which I absolutely love.
Thank you so much.
How are things going with the podcast?
They're going great. We're closing in on more than 100 songs by Propagandhi now that we have dissected in the last 2.5 years with numerous bonus episodes. So we've done, you know, more than 120 episodes total.
Yeah.
And I'm closing in on having several of Propagandhi's LPs discussed in their entirety. If people are just hearing about this podcast now, you're coming in at a time when I'm actually getting fairly close to concluding the major LP discography breakdown, where we go through Propagandhi. Every episode is about a different song. So I'm coming to essentially like the light at the end of the tunnel for breaking down Propagandhi's 7 current LPs.
Right. You're going to run out of songs at some point. And the cool thing about the podcast though, is it can exist at any time. I mean, it's not a current events podcast. It's not something that like, you know, like 1 week to the next, it's like building on. You could listen to this podcast tomorrow. You can listen to it in 7 years. You can listen to it in 15. It's really just a in-depth look at the songs, the lyrics and the music. And it's great.
Yeah, we've had it such a pleasure. My two co-hosts, Keith, who is a teacher, and also my friend Steve, who is now co-hosting it with me. We've talked to so many amazing guests. There have been so many amazing covers submitted by listeners. And I've really tried to, it's, you know, I've just had a blast with it. It's ad-free. And I just love that it's kind of a record of my life as well, our lives, the people who host it. We, you know, we talk about all kinds of stuff related to what we find in the songs, but then make personal connections to what the songs are actually about. So it's been such, I cannot stress this enough, the most rewarding creative journey of my entire life.
Well, thanks for doing it. Thanks for letting us in on all this great content. I love the cover songs that you started doing. You weren't doing that when we talked last, so that's been like a fun new addition to the podcast. You've asked me to do a cover or two, and I've politely declined. My skills are not, I don't think I could do a Propagandhi song.
Open invite.
So, yeah. I'd have to hum it or something. But, yeah. So, definitely check out Unscripted Moments, a podcast about Propagandhi. It is fabulous.
Mm-hmm. Well, in connection to what we're going to talk about today, Brendan Kelly, singer of the Lawrence Arms, has been on my podcast where he was the guest on the Rock for Sustainable Capitalism episode. So, the band that we're going to talk about today, full of Propagandhi fans, so it's not that far of a leap for me.
All right, Greg, well, I have a feeling that we have a lot to talk about, so let's jump into O Calcutta by the Lawrence Arms. O Calcutta was released on Fat Records on March 7th, 2006. The record was produced by Matt Allison and the band at Atlas Studio. So Matt Allison, right off the bat, pretty good guy to have on your team.
Totally. He made several Alkaline Trio records, I think, notably God Damn It. So a person whose name has been involved in music production for my entire music listening experience in my life.
Things did not start off very smoothly. Bassist vocalist Brendan told punksite.com, "It was just the three of us this time. We couldn't get Todd in. Todd, he's still fully in the band, but like he missed the recording. So I did all the guitars. Neil did a little bit of the guitar stuff too, actually. The really, really good guitars are Neil, and all the other stuff is me." And that's not all. Brendan told the AV Club, "Through the writing and rehearsal period leading up to that record, and even the recording, I was in a fucking full leg cast because I snapped my kneecap in half."
Yeah.
"Ooh, from conception to delivery of O Calcutta, I was one-legged. It was unbelievably painful for months and months. I think that so much of the rage in that record has got to come from me being completely fucking immobilized." And I loved when I found out about that because I'm like, hell yeah. Like, you are like uncomfortable and in this leg cast and you're no doubt just like pissed off, you know?
Totally, man. Like, there's nothing like losing your mobility for long periods of time to just rethink how you see the world. Like, I had knee surgery in 2015 and I had back surgery in 2017. So I had several years in a row where my own personal health was severely degraded with what I was able to do as a very active person that was driving me absolutely crazy. So whenever Brendan gives interviews like that, I put myself back in those exact scenarios and just kind of feel a little bit of kinship for the mental struggle of being an immobile person who is used to like having a really active lifestyle.
Yeah. And being out of your comfort zone, I feel like kind of delivers good returns. I've read articles about major league pitchers who will purposely make themselves uncomfortable. Like, they'll stick stuff down their pants to be uncomfortable on the mound. And you would think like, what? You'd want to be comfortable up there loose. But some pitchers like that uncomfortable feeling so that they're alert, so that they're like not falling into being too comfort, because maybe if you get too comfortable, you're making more mistakes. You know, you're not thinking as alert. I don't know, you know,
it's
one of those things. So I loved that quote when I found it. I was like, that makes a lot of sense.
Yeah. Was that the David Anthony article in the AV Club about the Lawrence Arms around the release of O Calcutta?
I think so. Yeah.
I love David's work. David is the co-host of the As You Were podcast about Alkaline Trio.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. It's a great podcast.
And David is a wonderful Chicago music writer. So it's really cool that you found that, because I was reading that article too and I loved it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, whether he wrote that one or not, great, great writer, great articles coming out of AV. According to Lawrence Arms drummer Neil Hennessy, "We rented a practice space above a dog grooming business. It didn't have any ventilation. There was no air conditioning and there were no windows. You walked up the stairs and felt like you were putting on a wet dog smelling sweater. It was so gross." So there you go. Another layer of like this uncomfortable vibe that they were definitely picking up and getting onto record.
Man, I bet that dog grooming business, I wonder if they were like practicing and open at the same time, because that would be really uncomfortable to run a business right below a punk band practicing in like a hot, gross environment, you know?
Yeah, they're up there screaming and you're downstairs getting your dog shampooed.
That's amazing. There's a really great photo in this record of them in their practice space during this time period. And I wonder if that's the room that Neil's talking about upstairs from that dog grooming business. Because that photo inside the LP is awesome.
Yeah, yeah, absolutely. I bet that's what it is. Absolutely. Because wouldn't you want to capture that like on your record? Like, look, this is the place where we made this music, you know?
Totally. Absolutely. Yeah. I completely agree.
Adds to that a little bit. So, despite all that stuff, broken legs, smelly dogs, the band was not deterred from setting out to write and record an exceptional album. Brendan explained to AV, "Chris and I sat down and were like, here's what we're going to do. We're going to make a record like 15's Buzz or fucking Operation Ivy's Energy. One of those records that, when we were kids, made us want to do this for the rest of our lives. But we have to do it with our sensibility."
Man, I love that. And that article, I actually read that exact line yesterday. And I love that idea of taking what the Lawrence Arms members are fans of music-wise, like Brendan's love of like No Means No and Buzz is so widely known. He's talked about it in so many interviews that his influences are so prominently displayed in everything that he does. And then I love seeing ways that they borrow from those bands for songs on this record too. It comes through in so many spots on the record where they kind of have little homages to some of their predecessors, you know?
Yeah, like a line here or there. Yeah, we'll cover that when we get into the tracks. But
Love it.
I love when bands will kind of wear that out on their sleeves. Like, this is the stuff we love, and we're gonna, it's not like, I wouldn't even say borrowing. You're using it to like create your own. I don't want to see it. I don't know. What am I talking about, Greg?
Yeah, you're using art that exists that inspires you, and then you're giving a little nod to it, and then you're making something brand new. So out of old art grows new art. I mean, it's just the way that
There
art
you go.
happens throughout the centuries, that old art inspires new art, and it just builds upon each other. I mean, it's just a really amazing progression to watch in any kind of humanities field, whether it's, religious practices or the ways that schools operate or the ways that painters are inspired by their own teachers, and then bands as well, punk bands as well.
Absolutely. Brendan and Chris do a lot of the vocals together on this record. Brendan told thepunksite.com, it was just something that sort of came naturally. I mean, it just sort of coincides with a few things. The times when we would sing together on all the old stuff was always the parts I thought were the most dynamic and the best sounding. So we were just trying to maximize that. And I mean, thematically, this record is so much about the unity of friendship and raising your voice together. Just thematically, it made sense that we sing the songs together.
And I love that whenever they were talking about the concept of the record with Matt Allison, Brendan and Chris would explain it to him, and then Matt's like, I don't know if you guys have to sing every single song together. Like, they almost tried to like talk him out of it.
Yeah, Matt Allison.
But to me, that is the definitive characteristic that makes this record super special amongst Lawrence Arms' discography, is the way that it doesn't distinguish between a Chris song and then a Brendan song. It's like everybody all at once, all of the time. And so it's almost impossible to tell some of the times who even wrote the song in the first place.
Oh, definitely. And even sometimes, for me at least, and I feel like I'm pretty well learned on this band, I sometimes can't even tell who's singing because, for example, Brendan will use that like kind of like that growl, like that sort of higher pitched growl, but then he'll also use kind of like this,
Yeah, and he's got a
this like
really
loungy voice.
he really starts leaning into some of his clean vocal range on this record as well that he hadn't really done on records like Ghost Stories and stuff like that. So this to me is like a shift in Brendan on this record as well.
And that's why I was like, who is that? Is that Neil? Are they
Yeah.
having it? Yeah, it's like, who is that? But yeah, just really cool. Another funny quote that I saw in AV was this one from Chris, where he says, Brendan was definitely like, how cool is what the Beastie Boys do in terms of how they switch lines? They're kind of always involved in each other's verses. You see this with a lot of hip hop, so we were definitely playing with that idea. What's weird is that Brendan and I have very different perspectives and voices. When I listen back to Oh Calcutta, our voices have this weird blend where where at certain times we're singing together and it's actually difficult to pick up who is who. So even the band themselves are saying like it forms this new voice, you know?
Yeah, I completely agree. This record stands out to me so much as being completely special because, I grew up in St. Louis, just a few hours south from Chicago there, and I saw the Lawrence Arms play so many times at clubs like the Creepy Crawl and the High Point,
Nice.
In St. Louis in the late 90s and early 2000s. And, I saw Taking Back Sunday open for the Lawrence Arms in St. Louis, And it is. I most recently saw them in Rochester, New York, open for Bad Religion in 2019. But my history with this band goes all the way back to Guided Tour of Chicago era, because my friends and I were huge Slapstick and Asian Man Records fans. And so we were involved in this band from the very beginning. And this record to me is the one that just grabbed my attention so much. Because before I was like, I love going to see them live. They're so much fun. But then I would put on Ghost Stories and it was just sonically not what I was really able to enjoy that much. But seeing them live was so good. But this is like the record that punched me in the face so hard. I liked Greatest Story. I liked Apathy. But this is the one for me.
So what is it about this record? I mean, you talked about how it punched you, but what really grabbed you with O Calcutta?
So when this record came out, I was a senior in college. I was studying to be a teacher, but I didn't really want to become a teacher. I was like in my final year doing like student teaching, internships and stuff like that. And I was listening a lot to Potemkin City Limits by Propagandhi, very dark. I was listening to Canyoneer by No Trigger. Mm-hmm. I was listening to Survive by Much the Same. And I was listening to Troubled Stateside by Crime and Stereo. So those were like my rotating cast of records that year.
Excellent choice.
And I had a Discman and I had them all on CD and I would listen to them on my walks to and from campus. So every day I'm walking to school in my senior year of college after having spent a fortune on a university education and I have no interest in doing the job that I have been training to do. So I'm in a very dark mental headspace and these records were seriously like a saving grace for me. They just kept me sane and they kept me moving forward. But it was just that's the time and place when this stuff hit me. And this record, there's so much stuff about like not looking back, not having regrets, moving forward, charging forward. So there's so much of that thematic stuff in these songs that just kind of kept me going amidst this overwhelming urge to quit and like flee the country and like never be heard from again. And I was like, okay, I've done all this work. I have to keep trying. I can't regret what I've gone to school to do. I have to give it a shot. I have to keep moving. And so honestly, like listening to this kind of record, I was, you know, drinking and partying. I worked at a bar, a music venue, for goodness sake. So I was drinking all the time. This song's about alcohol and barfing in sinks. And yeah. I was like having these regrets about what I'd studied in college. So this thing really was a massive punch upside the head for me musically because there were so many similarities in my own life about like having tons of regrets, drinking too much, you know, having these massive doubts about my future that were really connecting me with what was going on in these songs.
It's amazing how sometimes records can be like a mirror into like what you're feeling or what your life is like at the time. I think that's why we connect to them so much because that's where we are, you know, that's what we're feeling and here it is.
Yeah, exactly. And this record was so much different than Greatest Story Ever Told, the record that preceded this. And, you know, because of the Lawrence Arms, like I read The Master and Margarita by Mikhail Bulgakov like five times since 2003 to the present day. But there was just something about this one that connected so deeply. There was no concept. It was just a cohesive, awesome batch of sing-along tunes. And the fact that they had, you know, Sharpie mustaches, there was a sense of humor behind this record.
I was just going to say that, yeah.
Yeah, there's humor in there. There's like, and it just kind of kept me moving. So I'm just thrilled that I still think that this record is one of my all-time favorites.
Still a go-to, absolutely. Well, Greg, I was a fan of Slapstick in the late 90s, so naturally I was interested in what Slapstick vocalist Brendan Kelly was doing when the Lawrence Arms popped up. I was actually working at my college radio station and had a connection with Asian Man Records, and they would just, you know, they would send me all the new releases, and that's how I found A Guided Tour of Chicago, and I remember putting that on. You know, all the old ska bands at the time were forming like punk bands and rock bands. And I was, you know, I was kind of bitter about that a little bit. I was annoyed that all my ska bands were going rock or emo. But I really liked Guided Tour. I was like, these guys made a transition into a different style of music. Well, at least Brendan, because the rest of the band wasn't in Slapstick. But, you know, just seemingly going with the music that was interesting to them at the time. I mean, that's what you do. You make the music that you find interesting at the time.
Mm-hmm. Did you miss the Broadways a little bit? Because I missed the Broadways live. So the first time I ever saw Brendan live was Lawrence Arms. So I never saw Slapstick. I never saw the Broadways, but I saw the Lawrence Arms tons.
I only caught the Broadways on those Asian Man comps. I didn't really get too much into them. But I remember exploring all those bands. I got into Tuesday, which was Dan's band, before Alkaline Trio, coinciding with the Alkaline Trio a little bit. But I just kept up with the band. And when Fat released O Calcutta in 2006, I remember first all the stuff on MySpace, you know.
Yeah.
They had the contest for the lyric sheets, and I remember they would, you know, they'd show the art and, you know, new Lawrence Arms coming. And when I finally got it in 2006, I was just floored. Like you, the power of the music, not so much even the music, but like just the lyrics and the imagery that those lyrics conjured up. They were just ambiguous enough that I could prescribe what I felt they meant to me. And we'll go into that a little bit, but it was just louder and faster than Greatest Story Ever Told. And I really liked Cocktails and Dreams.
Yeah.
Which Asian Man had put out, I think the year before, like in 2005. Mm-hmm. Quintuple Your Money is like still one of my favorite Lawrence Arms songs. And so there's just like that wave of like just solid music coming Absolutely. Out of this band at that time. So,
you know, and I got a little nerdy and I went on Discogs as well. And I was thinking about like the pressing info for this record. And I found that there are, you know, around 700 color copies of this record on vinyl. There's 240 wow. blues from 2006. The original pressing was only 240 blue copies. And then they did a yellow repress in 2021 of 432 copies. So if anybody out there has this record on color vinyl, there are not many of them.
Wow. Mm-hmm. That's cool.
Made me want to go
small number, yeah.
Yeah, made me want to go treasure hunting a little bit, but I refrained because I'm trying to be a little more responsible with my money these days.
I know. I don't even bother anymore because I know it's like a guarantee that I'm going to shell out money.
Mm-hmm.
I need that. All right. So, Greg, what do you say we dive into these tracks?
Let's do it. I'm excited to do it.
The album starts off with The Devil's Taken Names.
Yes, this is such an interesting one. And I don't know if anybody out there found the Lawrence Arms compilation record, We Are the Champions of the World.
Yeah, there's like five songs from these sessions on there.
Dude, yeah. And what's really cool about that record is that there are these little blurbs on the inside of the LP for We're the Champions of the World, because it came out way later. So it includes reflection blurbs that would not have been included on an original record.
Oh,
so
nice.
Devil's Taken Names says this was the single off O Calcutta and another one that was intended as more of a songwriting exercise than an actual song. I like to think it's about myopic weirdos with inflexible worldviews and the malaise that sort of outlook cultivates, but what the fuck do I know? Also, the use of the word strumpin' in this song is a tip of the hat to the mighty Outkast and their hit single Rosa Parks, which we are all quite fond of. So there's the little blurb on the inside of the Champions of the World LP.
That's awesome. And that pretty much lines up with what I felt like the song was about. It's about those people that turn their noses up at things and say, like, that's lame. I'm not doing that. Mm-hmm. You know, like, you don't knock it till you try it kind of thing. People are pretty quick to knock things they know very little about, you know, or haven't really experienced.
Yeah. You know, and I know this was the last song. I think Brendan said once upon a time on his Road to the Skeleton Coast podcast, this might have been the last song that they wrote for the record. Mm. But man, that opening bass hit of those like harmonic count in plucks is just
those four notes.
It's so cool. Boom, I love boom, the way boom. This thing kicks in.
Yeah. And at the top, shall we dance? Shall we limp around? I just love that. That always stuck out.
The dancing versus limping imagery too is really interesting. I love the contrast of that line, because if you think about dance, you think about human flourishing, right? And if you think about limping, you think about human flailing. So the opening line of this record is, to me, flourishing versus flailing.
Yes, absolutely. It's that choice. It's a question. Shall we dance? Shall we limp around? What decision are we going to make? Where are we going to go?
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's like you said, when you connected to this record, you were in a place in your life where you could have gone one way or you could have gone a completely different way.
Huge turning point moment for
me. And that's the first line of the album.
I know. See what I mean? Like, do you see why it just like, it was the perfect time and place record for me when I felt like I was about to make some massive life decisions. And this first line just nails that sentiment.
Very cool. I love the repeated line of, I've never tried that. It's like, because it repeats, it just reminds me of the person that's like, well, I've never done that. I'm not going to do it, you know?
Yeah. Yeah. You know, and they revisit that several times in the song. I've never tried that, but I know I don't like it. And, you know, I think about this, like, what do I know that I would hate that I refuse to even try? Does that make sense?
Yeah.
Like, there are certain things I know that I would dislike tremendously that I won't do. And a few of my examples of, I've never tried that, but I know I won't like it, is spelunking in caves, skydiving out of airplanes. Those are my two big ones. I do not want to go underground in a cave.
Small spaces. Woo.
And I don't want to jump out of a plane. So whenever I think of, I've never tried that, but I know I don't like it, it's not like intellectual things about like trying to understand things in the world that I don't understand. It's like things that like legitimately terrify me. So that's whatever I latch onto. I was like, this is an interesting mental exercise. If I know I don't like it, those are my examples.
Yeah. Well, yours are better than mine, man, because I'm like, I don't want to eat lobster.
Yeah. Well, and you're
never
New
tried
England,
it. Never will. Yeah,
you're a New Englander too. So, I mean, that's a bold
Trust
stance,
me.
In your part of the country, isn't
I've
it?
I've heard all about it.
Oh my God, I bet. What do you think about the line, or maybe I do, but I'm just too weak to fight it?
You have the best intentions. Like you feel like you should be doing something, but you're either not motivated or you don't have the confidence. You know, like, oh, I can't do that. Like, I can't make that decision, or I can't rise up. I'll never be able to do that. I can't get over that hump, you know?
Yeah. You know, there's been so much news in the country. So whenever I think about this, like, and maybe I do, and I'm just too weak to fight it, I think a lot about the legislation that gets passed in the United States about people who pass laws against certain things, but then later on down the road, it turns out that they are doing those exact behaviors that they have passed legislation against.
Yep.
And I'm just like, oh my gosh, how much of our prohibitive legislation in the United States is done by somebody who is deeply ashamed of their truth and their authenticity. And so instead of embrace who they really are, they say, I would never do that. I know I wouldn't like it, but in their heart, they're like, I really do. I really am that way. And so they pass laws against it. And then later on, it turns out that they are doing the things that they condemn publicly. So that's kind of what this reminds me of, you know, whenever I think about that line.
Well, they have that shame, you know, because they're playing to a political base that they know would not support that. And so they double down on their, we're going to outlaw this, you know, while secretly being like, but I'm slightly interested in.
I know. Yeah. And
exploring
the lyrics here
a little bit more.
This is such a mysterious song. So first of all, I just have to say off the bat that this is such a mysterious record. So many of the lyrics are so deeply open to interpretation. And so, like, I'm sure that there are people out there who are going to listen to our conversation who are going to be like, oh my gosh, they're so wrong.
Oh, of course.
And
that's encouraged, you know, like, what do you think the song is about? You know, like, cause I think these lyrics could have a lot of different meanings to a lot of different people. And I think that's really what the Lawrence Arms set out to do.
Yeah. You know, earlier I read that little blurb. So just going down a little bit, I'm looking at the lyrics here and there ain't no such thing as strumpin' for nothing. And so I know this is like a reference to Outkast. Mm-hmm. I went and listened to Outkast for the first time in a decade.
Yeah.
But while thinking about this song, and I found Rosa Parks and I listened to it and I read the lyrics, and every single published version of the lyrics for Outkast Rosa Parks that I found, the lyrics say slumpin'.
Oh.
With an L. And so the lyrics in the Lawrence Arms version are very clearly strumpin'. The published Outkast versions that I found all say slumpin'.
Slumpin'.
But when you listen to it, it very much sounds like strumpin'. So I'm like, are the published words wrong? Are they actually saying strumpin'? Because it sounds like strumpin' in the sung version.
Yeah.
But it says slumpin' whenever I read the Outkast lyrics, which is really annoying.
Well, you know, it's interesting, and I don't think that this is the case in this scenario, but I've actually read lyrics in the CD booklet that are different than what the person says, because I think in some cases the lyrics go off to, the artwork goes off maybe while it's still happening, and then in the studio the artist might make a change. Oh, that word doesn't fit right there. I'm gonna omit that word and change it to this. But, and then it doesn't line up with what the lyric sheet was. But I don't know if that's the case in this, but I do know that there are a lot of words in Outkast songs that I don't even know what the hell they mean. Like the club get crunk, like crunk. What does that mean?
Yeah. You know, something I'm wondering about, before we like dive, cause so much of my thoughts on this record are lyrical and imagery based and illusion based and, you know, ideas based. I'm just curious, like before we keep going, if what your thoughts are like holistically about the music and the general tone of the performance on this record, do you have any like big picture thoughts that kind of resonate with you for the musical performance? Because so much of what I think about this record is lyrical.
Yes. So I would say the exact same thing. I tried really hard actually to not focus on the lyrics on a few of my listens through. And I actually caught myself most often listening to the drums. I think Neil is an underrated drummer. He does a lot of quick changes and a lot of interesting things on the drums that I think kind of get overshadowed, because when you think of Lawrence Arms, you think of lyrics. I mean, their lyrics are fantastic. They're such good writers. They're well-read. So, I mean, it's really about the lyrics. And they don't really do any flashy guitar solos or extended intros, because I think the focus is the lyrics. So yes. Music-wise, I don't have a ton to say, really, about the music.
I'm so glad that you said that, because to me, the musical hero of this record is Neil Hennessy.
Yeah, absolutely.
1,000%. I listened to Neil so much on this record, and the dual vocal approach reduces the normal Lawrence Arms formula between Brendan and Chris songs on this record. So I've also found myself focusing a ton on Neil, because Chris and Brendan are so united and mixed that it allowed me the mental energy to be like, what is Neil doing? Instead of, oh, this is a Chris song, I have to analyze this Chris song. Oh, this is a Brendan song, I have to analyze this. So Neil, to me, is the musical hero of this record. The drums on this entire record are so solid and fantastic.
Yes. Yeah.
And there is a reason why Neil plays in The Falcon, The Smoking Popes. He's in Joyce Manor right now. He did backing vocals and has a on Siren Song of the Counterculture by Rise Against. He is a co-writer credit on their hit single Swing Life Away. He played drums on Less Than Jake's Gainesville, Florida LP. Neil is super special, and I really hope that people will consider him when they're thinking about some of the most solid drummers out there.
Yeah.
And this record, to me, is the one that made Neil Hennessy, like, opened all those doors to all these other bands.
Player, yeah.
This is the one, man. This record, Neil's the musical hero of this record, and I just wanted to say that before we get too deeply into these the rest of these songs.
All right, let's jump into Cut It Up.
I know this is one of the first songs that Brendan wrote. What did you find?
Not much. I really tried to dive into the lyrics on this one. I think out of all the songs on the record, this one, and maybe one other that we'll get to later on, this one is the one that caused me the most head scratching. Like, what is this song about? Is it about coke use?
Yeah, so we've got these opening verses. You're fading kind of fast, like the red brake light rushing past, the more than waking up when you're still at the bar, or this more than waking up when you're still at the bar. You know, when you wake up at a bar or when you wake up, like when it's daylight outside. This is a very specific experience that once you have it, you never forget that you had it. Like, I used to work at a bar. We used to frequently open the side door of the venue that I worked at, and the sun would be coming up, and I would have to go to class like 2 or 3 hours later. And when that happens to you, it quite seriously ruins an entire week of your life. When you have these kinds of experiences, like waking up at a bar or leaving a bar when it's light outside, it throws off the entire vibe of your week to where it feels like you're living in a parallel reality for several days in a row. So
yeah,
when I read this line, more than waking up when you're still at the bar, I was immediately transported back to a time in my life when I would frequently go outside and it would be light out. And I was like, wow, I've been at this bar for like 13 hours.
And there's a great line in the song where he says, "We've come a long way to end up lost."
Oh, I love that. Tell me your thoughts on that line. It's so good.
I just love that line because I'm like, well, you know, that's really such a powerful line because when, you know, when I think of that line, I think about like all the effort and all the work people put into things and then to not achieve success. Or what they perceive as success, because oftentimes you come a long way, end up lost, but sometimes that getting lost can actually bring you to a place you weren't expecting to go and it ends up being good. But I just love that line because it is so loaded with imagery. I mean, you could really sort of decipher it any way you want. We've come a long way to end up lost. Like, so maybe it's you've put in all this work and you weren't successful and you're like, it's a regretful statement. Like, for God's sakes, you know, we did all this work and it didn't work out. Now what, you know?
Yeah. Like, I mean, I would imagine that anybody who's in a band that didn't like quote unquote make it or become a career, we've invested thousands of hours of our lives into this band and now we're just breaking up and we have like virtually nothing to show for it. I think that's probably a pretty common thing. But like here we're drifting alone, which is one of the most misheard lyrics that I've ever had on this song. I realized that I always thought I heard it as drifting along, but it's drifting alone, according to the published words on like Genius.
Yeah.
Which is way lonelier than drifting along. Because if you're drifting along, it doesn't mean that you're alone. If you're drifting alone, it's like it adds this isolation effect to it. So,
and he's lurking around. So it's like, it's all this like sort of like dark, creepy, like it's not like a celebration. It's more of, like I said before, like a defeat. Like you're lurking around, you're drifting alone, you're lost. It's just all these words that really kind of set a mood.
I love it. And then we've got this really cool cut it up where Chris and Brendan ping pong their vocals back and forth. And I just love it because whenever they ping pong back and forth, what's really cool about some of the effect on the vocals on this record is that Chris kind of like sounds like he's like far away sometimes, like he's like yelling the words from the other side of the room so that the microphone is like getting this like echoey Chris. Brendan's like, cut it up, and Chris is like, cut it up, when he's like really far away from the microphone. And I just love the effect on some of that in these songs.
This album, and this is true in the first song as well, has a number of like these little turn up the volume and you'll hear it kind of things. There's a grunt in the first song, you know, the Propagandhi fans, I know, the Propagandhi lets out a little, you know. So I always thought that was kind of neat. Like, there are those little, it's almost like under the breath kind of like comments or like that sarcasm that this band is well known for.
Totally.
Sarcasm. So,
and then if we go forward, until the pain goes away. And like, this asked me to consider, you know, reflect a little bit on some of my own behaviors. Am I personally using anything in the challenges of my day-to-day life as numbing agents for my own individual pain? So cut it up until the pain goes away. So, you know, everybody out there can think about what they're doing in their own lives. Like, there's like drugs and alcohol and, you know, NyQuil sleeping medication and Twitter and Reddit and like running or food or going to the gym. Like, this song, Until the Pain Goes Away, this lyric says, what are our possibly multiple numbing agents that we use just to get through our day-to-day lives, because that's kind of what this is about to me, this line. And then we've got this, like, this next line is so interesting too. Everything on the avenue is a little more gray.
Yeah.
And then he's like, I don't want to remember. And I don't know about you, man, but like, as we age, the monotony of the world, things tend to get like less exciting. You know what I mean? It like, it sets into life. And like, when we go down a street that we used to think was like really awesome, like, oh, look at all the shops here, the bookstore and the little indie movie theater and the record store. And then when we like grow up and we're like, whoa, that's the thing that we thought was so amazing when we were 16 and we were like, you know, bright eyed and excited about the world. Like, and then you go and it's like this like totally crappy rundown suburban strip mall. And it's like, oh man, this actually
the hangouts, all the hangouts, you know,
yeah,
we hung out. It's just a pipe in the middle of it.
It's like everything's a little more gray. And I was like, oh my God, how that you look at things when you're 40 versus when you're 16. And it's like, wow, yeah, it's definitely a little grayer here now. I love the ending of Cut It Up too. This cruise is ending. Please hang on to your stub. Thank you for coming and thanks for the love. So I love the darkness of the song. And this is something that Propaganda does too, where they bum you out for the entire song. And then they give you this line, like, you got to keep on trucking anyway. Right.
A cordial goodbye. Yeah.
Yeah. This song does that so well, where everything is just such a bummer. I don't want to remember, cut it up. Everything's gray, the pain goes away, but then it's got this like imagery of this this sinking cruise ship, and then it's like, but thank you for coming, even though everything was a failure, I'm glad you were here, right? So that kind of talks, it's like a metaphor to me about like the mess of our lives. Like, hey, I might be failing in so many ways, but man, I'm really glad we hung out last Friday night. And I love this last line, because it can be like a sign off to like your entire life. You know what I mean? Thanks for being a part of my messy, imperfect, flawed journey on this planet. I know it felt like we were on a cruise ship that was sinking to the bottom of the ocean half the time, but holy smokes, what a ride it was. Yeah. So to me, it's like this whole entire life, which is like kind of a mess, kind of chaotic. And then at the very end, it's like, but man, I'm glad we were buds and I'm glad we were hanging out. And, you know, here goes our cruise ship is now sinking. We're going to the bottom. But man, what a good ride we had. So that's kind of like the ending of what this tune means to me. It gives you all that darkness. And then it asks you to appreciate that, hey, man, we actually had some good times.
Yeah. And I love to hear you say that. And it like totally changes my outlook, because honestly, my interpretation was, it's one of those like, all right, here's your door prize, you know, out you go. Thanks for stopping by. Like, so I love your interpretation, Greg. I'm going to replace my jaded sort of like lousy interpretation with your positive. We've got hope. Like, you know what? Thanks for being here. I like that. I like
that. And it's, you know, that's what's so funny about doing podcasts about music, is like you can bring two people that like love a song together into the same space and talk about it. And then you both like wind up changing each other's minds about it, like in the middle of the conversation. I love when that happens. It happens all the time on my podcast too.
That's part. That's a huge reason why I invite people on to just to talk about these songs. Like, hey, what'd you get out of this? You know, like, oh, that's pretty neat. Like, I'll take a little of that. I'll take a little of that. You know, I'll take a little of that too. It's fun to do.
Totally. Well, that's all I got for Cut It Up.
Great lakes, great escapes.
Yeah, I live on the Great Lakes, so this is kind of a cool one for me.
Oh, nice. Yeah, that connection there. I love this one because the song starts off with just vocal and guitar. And the guitar tone is neat because it kind of sounds like live, like they're in like a big room, like a big spacious room. It kind of feels a little distant.
Yeah.
I always thought that effect was kind of cool. I like that. Because then when it kicks in, it gives you a good punch.
Yeah. I mean, so I think I remember that this was Chris's first song that he wrote for the record. Like, Brendan came with a batch of songs, and then Chris's response to Brendan's first batch was Great Lakes, Great Escape. And then Brendan was like, oh my God, this is actually happening now. And Brendan actually did a little blurb for Great Lakes in the We Are the Champions of the World. So he says, when Chris sent me his demo for this song, I remember thinking, fuck, now I have to write some really kick-ass songs for this upcoming record, or I'm going to look more of a weak link than I already am. These weird bendy chord things he does throughout are some of the real trademark McCool at his McCoolest. And then Chris writes, the dream was always to have this song to find a place in Midwest lore alongside that 1980s commercial promoting Michigan tourism that features the memorable audio hook, "Yes, Michigan, the feeling's forever." Maybe it's obvious, but I repurposed that sentiment into this song title. So those are some of the thoughts from Chris and Brendan in the LP. But man, the opening visuals, like, go on this journey with me here, Jed. Like, I scratched my name into a table. So it's like you know, think about when you're a sixth grader vandalizing a desk at school, right?
Mm-hmm. Yep.
But then it gets really weird. The knife and phone just fucking lay there. These visuals remind me of like that Anton Chekhov story where once a gun gets introduced into a story, how it simply has to be fired sometime within the story. Like, once a gun comes into a short story, kind of the rule is that somebody will fire that gun at some point. So like, I see these objects of the knife and the phone being crucial items that get introduced into a short story plot and needing to be used before the story ends. So it's like, how do these things get used in this story? Like, you know, it's just one of those things that really jumps out at me.
Absolutely. I orchestrate a day of routine elements.
Mm-hmm.
And to me, it's like that line right there is really important because that gives me a sense of what the song is about. It's about wandering around, reflecting on something that is maybe ended or something. But it's like that sense of like, well, now what? You know, like just wandering around like, well, this is the way things were. And now it's not that way anymore. And he says a little later, and in the end we'll burn in history.
Mm-hmm.
You know, but he's hopeful of the opportunities that the city will provide him. He was wandering around and he's going out and he's doing all these like reckless things.
Yeah. Well, and what's so cool about that, is that it's essentially the fate that awaits all of us. Like, it doesn't matter how rich you are today. Mm-hmm. All of us are just going to become, you know, broken down carbon in coffins or in, you know, whenever they cremate you, you're going to be either like dust in a cremation bin or you're going to be a rotting corpse in a box. So we're all going to be broken down, and no one 150 years from now will remember that you and I even existed, which is pretty wild, but maybe they will, because maybe our podcast will live on forever. So we're like creating these weird records of our lives on these podcasts too. But I love that line because it just says like, you know what, this time on earth is so fleeting, so short. In 150 years no one's gonna ever remember we were here, so you might as well take that chance and love hard, fall in love, take a risk, because we're all just wanderers and we're all just making this shit up as we go along. So you might as well take some chances when you're feeling like it might not work out. You know, like, taking a risk means you might fail, but in 150 years, no one's going to remember that we are even human beings on this planet, and our houses might not even be standing still. So it's kind of interesting to think about being wiped off the face of the earth entirely, which is what I love about this line.
Yeah. And he says he used to paint himself with sentiment. He used to be, he used to be expressive. And that's what that line is. It's like this expression of our fleeting time. And, but now that I'll turn to gray.
Well, dude, and the drumming under this part right here, but all my colors always turn to gray. Like, Neil under this line is just so great. Like, he's so powerful and precise. And did you know that this record, the music was recorded to 2-inch tape as well?
No, I didn't.
This is a 2-inch tape record for the music. I think they did the vocals and Pro Tools, but this is a 2-inch tape record, which is like, if you've ever recorded to tape, you know, like, it's very challenging, and you have to get good takes, and you can't just cut and paste and splice everything together, which just makes the Neil performance on stuff like that so much more impressive because he took drumming risks and nailed it on 2-inch tape where he could have just spliced it together if they did it all electronically. There's one more thing that we just skipped over. Did you hear those whispers between the chorus and verse two?
Between the chorus and verse, no. So, well, you know, I said earlier that there's a lot of turn up the volume stuff on this record, but
there's a little tidbit in here where Brendan, after I wonder as I'm wandering, and then that goes into this, and then Brendan goes, we're one and the same, you and me. And it is a lyric from Brother Rat from No Means No's album, Small Parts Isolated and Destroyed, and the Day Everything Became Nothing. So Brendan literally drops a No Means No lyrical quote between the chorus and verse two on the song.
That's awesome, because I have that on, I have them doing that on Requiem Revisited.
Yeah, there's whispers on that one too.
Yeah, so that's cool. I caught that one. I didn't catch this one. That's funny.
Yeah, it's a weird, there's that's like funny. Weird little whispers throughout this record. And the other one that I think on Requiem, I think is like actually kind of creepy sounding.
Yeah.
This next chorus, and then the M will burn in history. I'll take a chance and fall in love tonight. But yeah, I kind of already chatted about that line. What do you got? What do you got for these like next choruses and lines coming up?
Well, just more of like what I said earlier, I got the city on my side. You know, he's kind of feeling like there's comfort in that familiarity. That goes along with that. I used to be sentimental. He's tying, because that's a very sentimental thing to, like, you know, be in the city. This is my home. It's my city. But there's a point toward the end of the song where he's talking about fuck all this ancient history. And that to me is like, the past is in the past. It's time to move on, you know?
Well, dude, and that's what I was saying about why this record hit me so much in that specific time and place in college. All this ancient history, moving forward, getting rid of that and like charging forward. Mm-hmm. It really, this is one that really resonated with me. Oh, but you know, thinking about the Great Lakes connection. So I live here in Buffalo. I'm smack dab in between two Great Lakes. Lake Erie is directly to my west. And Buffalo is a really interesting city because we get like ocean quality sunsets over Lake Erie. Because it's endless water facing west. So Buffalo gets these incredible like ocean style sunsets.
That's awesome.
And then we've got Lake Ontario to the north of us, and across Lake Ontario is the great city of Toronto. But, you know, I was thinking about this line, I don't worry when I'm wandering Great Lake, I don't need a great escape, because for a lot of my life, I moved around a lot, and I've often had this tendency to where, like, if life is going badly, I start looking online for, like, job postings, like, around the world. and that took me... Yeah, I mean, that took me, I was like, okay, things are going bad, time to get a new job, move to a new country. And it gives me a sense of direction to completely rethink my life. But I got divorced in Buffalo, and I immediately thought, like, I'm going to move somewhere. But for the first time, I couldn't leave because I have a kiddo here in Buffalo. So instead of not worrying when I'm wandering, like this song says, I was like, whoa, I have to stay and I have to feel it and I have to go through it. I can't just run away to a new place like I've done in the past. So this song had me thinking about a lot of like stuff that's happened in my life in the last like 3 or 4 years. And I was like, whoa, before I would run away with a great escape, and now I can't, and I'm on a great lake. So it was a really wild circular experience of thinking about my own life. But that's another, like, that's the Great Lakes connection I have to this one.
That's awesome. Thanks for sharing that. That's cool.
Mm-hmm.
The next song on the album is Recovering the Opposable Thumb, which is a great title.
I had this insane thought recently about opposable thumbs and how powerful the human opposable thumb is compared to us and other species in the world, and what the power of the opposable thumb has essentially allowed human beings to do in throughout the entire history of civilization, and how what has the opposable thumb become? It is a texting device and scrolling. So one of the most amazing evolutionary traits of human civilization that has given us so much power as a species has turned into this reductive activity of scrolling and clicking.
Yeah.
So whenever I think about the opposable thumbs now, this album came out in 2006, so just pre-iPhone, right?
Yeah.
And so what the opposable thumb has become in the years since this record came out is super fascinating to think about.
Yeah, it is really a harsh take on that. I love some of the lines, and we'll get into Toby Keith in a minute.
Oh yeah,
but
I can't wait.
I want to say one thing at the start of the song. I always, and I don't know why, maybe if you feel the same way, you can verify my feelings a little bit
sure.
here, but I always think of Elvis Costello when the song starts. It's just guitar and vocal, and I'm not saying he sounds like Costello, but it's a very like Costello thing.
Yeah.
It's like the style or something. I don't know why I always thought that. Now it's like stuck with me. But
I affirm that I can see exactly why you would say that. there any hope for us, or are the rumors true?
Yeah.
Love it.
But diving into the song a little bit, I love it. It's a real harsh look at how things were in that time of 2006. So I want to start with the fact that it references Toby Keith, you know, the big hat wearing country boy.
Mm-hmm.
Toby Keith's horses and Toby Keith's men finally put us all in our place. And, you know, I pored over that line trying to understand it. You know, I don't really know anything about Toby Keith and that corny red, white, and blue song he wrote in response to 9/11. You know, I guess he got into a fight with the Dixie Chicks about this song. But anyway. He wrote that, I love this bar song that always comes on in every terrible bar you've ever been to. But I thought about that song and, you know, old Toby is celebrating the red, white, and blue and the Lawrence Arms kind of take that and they look at it and they're like, this is not a celebration. You know, this is not, this is not a celebration of slipping through some crack. This is sloth and devastation and we're the resulting trash. And I was like, boom.
Yeah, dude, I love that line. Like, because if you think about that, we are the trash in this lyric, because if you think about like what species on the planet has hands down had the leading cause of all things horrible, it's people. Like we're the worst species. We are the cause of the sloth and devastation. We are the trash.
Yeah, and it, like people would be like, that's such a negative outlook, but it's like, but it's reality. Look around. Look at what humans have been given, all this technology, our opposable thumbs, right? And what have we done with it? We're giggling about cat and fart videos on the internet. I mean, the internet's been used for a lot of great things. I get that. But really, the popular stuff is all this like really, like, what are we doing?
Yeah, and it's like questioning how we use our intelligence too. You know, I love this next line, count on your fingers tonight, because for me, I'm not a very mathematical person. My mathematical mind is very limited. And so I occasionally do count things out on my fingers, especially when I'm doing like fourth grade math with my daughter. Oh, so
sure.
It's like particularly funny to me that, you know, immediately after we're the trash, it's like, so count on your fingers, dum-dum. And I'm like, oh God, I actually do that like several times a week. And it really was just a hilariously comedic connection to me, like sitting there in my living room, like doing my daughter's homework and having to like count things out on my fingers. Cause I was like, oh boy. Yeah.
Yeah. Well, then he says, and believe what you find. So it's like, you know, this sense of like being naive and just being like, you count it all on your fingers, like, well, that must be it, you know?
Yeah. Well, and you also think about like people quote unquote doing their own research, which is one of the most overly parroted lines in society today of, you know, saying, oh, well, I'm doing my own research, when really what this has been, believing what you find, I did my research. Really what it means is you sat on the toilet and you watched YouTube. So, you know, you're not in a lab, you're not doing controlled scientific studies, you're not going through a peer review process, you're watching somebody's YouTube video, which is believing what you find and saying that you did research. and this is what we've been reduced to, thinking that we are above and beyond actual experts in actual fields where people do these things for a living.
Right.
And then we say that they're the enemy. So this is like a massive condemnation of our society at large, but it's also just gotten so much worse since 2006. Like this, these lines have aged very well for me.
Yeah. Well, yeah. Because then he goes on to say, I'm sick of making small talk in this rotting chow line. So, you know, the hits keep coming on this song. They're not holding back. And I love that line because it's like, I'm just sick of like not doing anything. I'm just sick of like things being the way they are and continuing to be that way. We're all talking about how, oh, it sucks. It sucks the way things are. And yet we continue to just roll with this. You know, we're not changing it, we're not questioning it, we're not pulling things down as much as we should be. Status quo, you know?
Yeah, and if you think about the food, the reference to food too, how there's a lot of, you know, gluttonous behavior, there's like a lot of like dumbing down of, you know, American society. So whenever you think about that chow line, you got to think about like the McDonald's KFC drive-through. You know what I mean? Where we're just funneling and funding a system of, you know, ultra convenience and insanely horrific food practices. And we just keep cycling through it year after year, you know?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, but you nailed it. It's quick, man. Yeah. Let's pull in, get my Whopper.
Absolutely. And then, I mean, this like, and then he keeps asking, like, can we recover from this? And I love the part where it's like, recover.
Yeah.
Can we recover? Can we recover? And then we cover our heads and we run for the gutter. And then, there's these like really great screams. And it's like, the gutter is like the lowest point, right? We have these sewer systems below our cities. We cover our heads so we don't look at what we're doing. We cover our eyes, we cover our ears, we are like la 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 la, like Lloyd in Dumb and Dumber. Mm-hmm. And we run for the gutter, which means we go to the lowest point. Mm-hmm. So like it's like saying that our nation is a sewer. Like we are a sewer to me. And then there's that great scream in that line too, to just kind of like, it's like this insane scream from like from depths of despair while watching a nation become a sewer.
Yeah. Yeah.
It's depressing.
It's like using like emotive, like verbal output to like match like a feeling, you know?
Yeah. Oh my God. And like Neil's drums under that recover. So it's just, can we recover? Mm-hmm. And it's just Neil going, it's just Neil doing the beat underneath Brendan, just building up and up and up. And then the guitar's going and just going up the fretboard.
Yeah.
And, or maybe he's going in reverse on the fretboard. I can't really remember, but it's just this guitar slide, Brendan screaming and Neil just going, and it's just this march towards complete insanity building up to that screaming moment where it just all cuts loose.
It's a great build-up.
And then they bust into the you know, the Toby Keith stuff, and then the slop line and everything that comes from here on out. Yeah,
it's great. We're scratching with our hooves.
Yeah, and it's like you know, it's a wonderful hug when there's so much more to love, when there's stakes and hearts jammed in your face. And if you think about 2006, right, like pre-Twitter, but, you know, right when Facebook was super popular.
Yeah.
The hearts jammed in your face has become more timely over time because of how much like we search for Instagram likes and Twitter likes and how that's come to like dominate our social fabric. And as a podcaster myself,
validation,
like,
yeah,
dude, like you and I, we both put out Instagram posts with artwork for our episodes that we spend time on. Mm-hmm. And so it's like, you want people to click on it, but we're just as guilty of it, of like the hearts jammed in our faces and being like, please click on my artwork that my friend made and spent 5 hours on, like, please like it so that it gets into other people's faces so that I can keep my podcast going with people who actually listen to it. And we're just a part of it, man. We're just feeding right into it.
Absolutely. I'm just as guilty. You know, that feeling of wanting it to be noticed. Well, because, you know, I think that's really a human quality of like wanting what you do to matter to people, wanting what you do to be noticed. And it's been amplified to such a point where it's like now every little thing people are doing, they need validation for. Look where I am right now. Look what I'm doing right now. It's almost like it didn't happen. unless you post it and everybody knows about it and like validates what you've done. Oh, you did. It's like the clap, you know, you did it. Nice job.
Exactly.
You know? And so with the podcast, you know, I put up photos all the time and I'm like, you know, look at my record. Look what I did. You know, look what I got.
Dude, my record collection is right behind me. And like so many of my records I've put on like the Propaganda Podcast Instagram page. And it's like, hey, click on this. And I get like 157 likes on it. I was like, hey, that was a good post.
All right.
So it just makes me feel so dumb that I have found so much validation in doing that. And how in 2006, like this song was like, yeah, we're a nation of clicks and hearts and likes. And I'm like, oh my God, what have I done? But I love where this song goes next. We have this explosive moment of Dear Mother, I'm Sorry. Maybe my favorite moment on the entire record. Dear Mother, I'm sorry. And I'm just like, this is so awesome. It's just this explosive moment. It's great vocal delivery. Something I find very important is if I see a band live and I've never heard them, but I can like sing a part later on after I leave the show. This is a memorable moment that if somebody who's never heard the Lawrence Arms before goes and sees them live and they go, Dear Mother, I'm sorry, that person's going to leave that show and they're going to remember this moment. You know what I mean?
Stuck in their head. Yeah.
This is the moment for me. Like, this is an unforgettable line. It makes it amazingly memorable. And that's to me what makes a truly great song is, can I sing it later after hearing it one time?
Yeah. It sticks with you. Yeah. That's really important.
Mm-hmm.
And that concludes part one of a two-part episode on Lawrence Arms' O Calcutta. Please tune in to Talking Records next week when we'll have the second part of this episode. I'll be joined by Greg once again, and we'll finish off the album. Thanks for tuning in, everybody. Thanks for checking us out on the socials. Thanks for your album suggestions, your filling in the gaps of things that we miss on the podcast. We always appreciate that. It's fun to talk music. It's fun to talk music with you. Thanks for tuning in. We'll see you next week with part two. All right, everybody, take care.